Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
LitFest is around the corner. The Tribune's sure been pushing that, haven't they? But it's a great event in the city. And it brings journalists, it brings writers of all stripes, novelists, writers of nonfiction, all into one place. And then they do readings and interviews and talk sessions, and you buy books and mill about. It's just one of the great things of the summer in the city. And we've been featuring some of the artists on this show. Linda Gartz is one of them, a Chicagoan who's written a memoir of race, change, and fractured community in 1960s Chicago. Her book is called Redlined, and she's in our studio. Linda, nice to meet you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
People know your work in Chicago. You've worked in television for Channel 2, for Channel 11. You are a documentarian and a writer and a reporter and an educator.
Yes, that's all true.
So now you've been pushing, listen to me. You didn't use that word, did you?
No.
You've been promoting Redlined, which is a book you've written about really your family experience growing up on Washington Street in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
What a great story.
Thank you.
And so well told. And I didn't know, maybe I did, but I didn't really know sort of the history of that phrase, redlined.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us where that came from.
Okay, well, back in 1933, the Roosevelt administration, in the heart of the Depression, decided they wanted to make loans more available to people, so they started the FHA and they started the Homeowners Loan Corporation. Homeowners Loan Corporation, often known as HOLC, H-O-L-C, asked real estate agents and banks around the country to map neighborhoods based upon which neighborhoods were safe for loans. And they did this with a color-coding map. And you can actually find samples of these maps of many, many hundreds of places in Chicago, in the country, by going to mapping inequality. But what they did is they gave the color green to those neighborhoods that were very safe for loans, blue, pretty safe. Good. Yellow meant definitely declining, not so great. But red meant no loans were available at all. So they would literally either color the area in or red or draw a red line around it. And the thing that is significant about that is it wasn't just that the housing stock may be bad, but if one African-American person moved into that neighborhood, then that neighborhood was redlined. And so that really deprived African-Americans for all those years forever of investing in property.
So you describe what it was like when a black family would move into the neighborhood. And racism may have been part of it. You don't want blacks moving into your white neighborhood because it's a white neighborhood and you're somehow threatened by that. But it was true, evidently, that if blacks started to move into the neighborhood, then you would find it difficult to get a home loan to buy in that neighborhood, or a home improvement loan would be difficult to get.
Exactly. And I think that is one of the reasons why a lot of, and certainly this is true of my family, pardon me, if you drove through African-American neighborhoods, they always looked very dilapidated. But when you think about it, if you wanted to get a loan to, let's say, fix your sagging porch, you couldn't get a home owner's loan. You couldn't get a home equity loan.
This is such a key point, and you make it early in the book, and I'm so glad you did, from a very personal perspective, too, because there'd be members of your family or friends going, boy, the black neighborhood, black has moved into the neighborhood. What are we going to do about that? Literally, fence post-type conversation. And you say it was true, but not for the reasons that we might think. That is, the neighborhood may go downhill, not because black people are sloppy or lazy, but because they can't get the financing to put a new roof.
That's true. And also, in many cities, the government specifically allowed zoning for polluting industries to go into black neighborhoods because white neighborhoods didn't want them. So that was another aspect of the neighborhood looking very bad.
So they literally draw a red line around that neighborhood.
They draw a red line, and I have maps that I show at my presentations, such as this one coming up at Printer's Row. I have the actual maps that were from 1940 that show that.
So is the residual effects of that still felt today? Are those the tougher neighborhoods in the city still?
You know, this is pretty much true throughout the country. Those neighborhoods that were redlined then are still highly segregated today. And I think if you want to look at the history of why we are so segregated, it's not just because some people like to say it's de facto segregation, meaning, well, blacks like to live with blacks and whites like to live with whites, but it's really a government-imposed policy.
Give me a neighborhood. What is a redlined neighborhood in Chicago?
Well, I would say, now, first of all, redlining was banned in 1968 with the Fair Housing Act, so that's 50 years ago. However, there's still residual effects of that, like a big study done by PBS NewsHour and Reveal found that white folks get loans for homes at three times the rate that blacks do with the same financial profile. So I can't say a neighborhood is redlined today because the policy doesn't exist anymore, but it would have been West Garfield Park, where I grew up. It would have been the South Side neighborhoods, you know, wherever a black person lived, for sure, that was redlined.
Right. Well, I mean, by definition.
Right.
Or certainly if it was a predominantly black neighborhood. So Englewood today is probably a vestige of redlining.
It probably is, yes.
Austin may have been a redlined neighborhood.
You know, Austin...
It depends on when, doesn't it?
Yeah, it definitely depends on when, because when I was ready to go to high school in 62... Austin High School was still about 94% white. I don't have the exact numbers, but over the period of time that those 4 years, I would have been at Austin had I been able to go there. My district was in Marshall High School, actually, and I heard your interview yesterday, which was very, very interesting. That probably would not have been redlined at the time when I was there.
Yeah. Were those public? Did the families, did the city know that the geography was partitioned out into A, B, C, D, green to red neighborhoods?
I would think the powers that be would have to have known.
The bankers knew.
The bankers definitely knew, because the bankers were the ones who used these maps to be able to determine where they were going to give loans. And they simply said no loans if there is a single African-American person in the community. And that was maybe not written down, but if you go on this mapping inequality, you can see the actual comments that the realtors or bankers made on the side. And they're quite shocking to look at today. I don't even think I'd want to say them on the air.
Give me a clue, though.
Well, they might say, for example, foreigners were also not welcome in many neighborhoods. So they might say Italians coming in. Or it might say threatened by Negro encroachment might be a neighborhood.
What do you make, though? So if you were a white neighbor, if you were in a predominantly white area, and African Americans began to move into that neighborhood, and you describe some of these conversations where they would say, well, the coloreds are coming, I think. Mm-hmm. Was that the word?
The polite term of the time, which both blacks and whites used, was color. For example, the National Association of Colored People.
Right.
People use that term as a polite term.
But if people put their life savings into it, you described how families would save for years and years and years to get that down payment. And it just seemed like wealth wasn't as profuse back then as it is now. So you can understand how people today and certainly then would really value the integrity of their neighborhood from a financial standpoint. If a person of color, an Italian or a black person, was moving into that neighborhood and they don't like that, it maybe doesn't, by today's definition, make them racist as much as realistic. Even if they embraced integration, they know that the value of their home is going to suffer.
Yes, that was a great fear among whites, that property values would suffer. And even Isabel Wilkerson, in her book, The Warmth of Other Suns, which is about the Great Migration, she points out that this was a reality. It was understood that property values would fall. And when she says, but not for the reasons that whites thought, that was the redlining that people didn't understand. They thought it was, they looked at the evidence, they see dilapidated homes, they say, we don't want blacks here. And plus, when they move in, our neighborhood is going to go down.
Well, it's two-pronged, as you point out also, because African-Americans were earning less. They still are than whites.
Yes.
So it's not like you were going to self-finance that roof. You didn't make as much money. And even if you were employed, you weren't employed to the level that you might be able to get a loan that a white person would. Besides, you've been redlined, so forget about it. And it, almost by design, then, black neighborhoods would disintegrate structurally.
Yes. Yes, that's absolutely true. And, you know, the FHA, if people would build, let's say, a development that had 131 units, if one unit were sold to a black, the FHA wouldn't
really
back those loans.
Really?
Yeah. You know, you can read – my book is not meant to be a technical or, a book that is it's definitely heavily researched, but it's not like something like Color of Law, an academic book.
No. In fact, so then what does your family have to do with all of this? That's the book.
The book is a lot about my family. My grandparents settled in West Garfield Park in 1912, and I sold my mom's two flat after she died in 1995. So we had a presence in West Garfield Park basically the entire 20th century. So what I was trying to do is tell the story of my parents and their devotion to property. My grandfather is an immigrant, had been a janitor, and even though my father had a college education, he was just devoted to this kind of property care. So they had put a tremendous amount of personal effort. I mean, they didn't hire anything. Everything they did themselves into beautifying their home and actually making it into a rooming house, which was really illegal, but they did it anyway. And so they were very invested in the neighborhood, Bethel Church, which out of which came Bethel New Life, if you know that community organization, was my family church at West End and Keeler. So the whole neighborhood, you know, we were invested in the whole neighborhood. And then when the first African American family moved on to our block in June of 1963, they didn't know quite what to do. My mom kept a diary of all this. That's what's really fascinating is I have all these diaries and letters from the whole 20th century, thousands of pages upon which I've based this book.
Your parents were such great takers of journals. I mean, not just about real estate, too, by the way.
No.
About you, about each other. It's a treasure trove.
Yeah, it's a treasure trove. And these are primary documents of Chicago. Of Chicago living and Chicago history of one family. We're not famous, but the Newberry Library wants this entire collection because they say they've never seen anything like
it. It's so intimate, and it's not so super personal that it's not relevant to a larger audience. It's as I was reading the stuff that you were putting in the book, I thought this works both ways, doesn't it? It's an intimate portrayal, but it's also a bigger story. And that's what was surprising about this, reading your book. It's called Redlined. Let's pause for a second. You may have a question, comment, or observation. Redlined is Linda Gartz's book. It's a memoir of race, change, and fractured community in 1960s Chicago. Speaking of LitFest, Linda Gartz is here. Her memoir is Redlined. It's a story of race, change, and a fractured community in the 1960s Chicago. If you're listening to us in Pennsylvania, you're going to love this book because more than anything, it's a personal narrative. You learn, though, about how communities get fractured and segregated. What's the takeaway, though? I mean, so it's fascinating to read about your family, mental health issues, immigration issues, immigrant issues, personal betrayal issues. It's a great American family yarn. But what's the takeaway for all of us today in reading about your book?
Well, I think that, first of all, in terms of the redlined aspect, I want people to understand that this is why we're a segregated society.
That it was institutional.
That it was a government policy that created this segregation. It wasn't by accident. And that if we are going to solve this, we're going to have to be willing to accept to have people of color move into white neighborhoods. Maybe they might be Section 8, and people aren't too happy about that. So that's one thing, is to kind of try to break apart some of the segregation, which costs Chicago billions of dollars, according to the Metropolitan Planning Council. The other takeaway with the family is I want people to understand, I think in relationships and marriages, to really be vigilant, to understand what can be happening to their relationship that they may not even be aware of. You know, they're sometimes parents undermine children's relationships. Maybe they don't intend to, they just do.
Maybe you discover that mom didn't like the woman that the son picked out, and preferred somebody else.
Yeah, right. Like in the World War II letters, I have 300 letters written to and from my uncle during World War II, and in them, my grandmother says to my uncle that she doesn't like my mother. She puts it, she says, Lil is only for herself. And I had never known that.
And this other girl is 1,000 times Lil.
Right.
Ooh, that's got to hurt.
Yeah, and that was, you know, her youngest son's girlfriend. And so she just wanted this other girl, I think as much as she wanted her son to be alive and for them to marry, she wanted this other girl for a daughter-in-law, and she was stuck with my mother, who married my dad, of course.
When you drive through some of the older neighborhoods of Chicago and see dilapidated blocks and you see these grand old homes, or you know they were there, what do you think when you see those?
You know, I have gone back to the old neighborhood several times. That's West Garfield Park. I've gone to a couple of church services at Bethel Lutheran Church, which is West End and Keeler. And I stop by and always look at my house, 4222, which is a beautiful...
West Washington.
4222 West Washington Boulevard. A couple blocks west of Pulaski. And, you know, sometimes I've been tempted to buy it back and like, just redo it and live in it. I feel badly about it because it's been 50 years since the Martin Luther King riots after he was, you know, so cruelly assassinated. So I you know, gentrification is a hot topic, so I'm not even going to get into that. But however it would be, I would love to see these communities come back.
Read Redlined and then meet the author. She's going to be at Lit Fest on Saturday at 5 o'clock with Hermaine Hartman, who wrote Indigo Legacy. You both will be there Saturday at 5 at Jones College Prep. Is that where you're going to be doing that performance?
Yes, 700 South State.
You're also doing a book signing and reading, 57th Street Bookshop, June 24th at 3 p.m. That's a Sunday.
Yes, that's correct.
If folks want to follow you, how do they do that?
Well, I have a website, lindagartz.com, where they can learn tons more about redlining, the archives, about the book. There's videos, lots to learn, and all my events are posted there.
Good luck, Linda. Well done. Nice to meet you.
Very nice to meet you. Thank you so much for having me.
It's 2:31. Our news is next. And then, what's the latest with the volcanoes? There's no segue from one of those to the other, but we're going to catch up on that amazing story in a minute.